Radio. It's 11:16, and you're listening to On the Air with Glenn Coble. And today I have a special guest. We have her, I think we've had her for the last 4 months, something like that. Dr. Marilyn Coleman. Are you there, Dr. Coleman?
I am.
She's here. All right. And we've been talking about your plants in your yard and in her case, in her farm. But lots of things. We're going to talk about fertilizer now. Is that right?
That's right. We're going to talk about fertilizer, propagation, and disease control.
So all right.
I think a lot of people are going to be interested in the disease control because you're
sure
going to be getting into tomatoes and peppers and stuff like that. So we don't want to spend too much time on stuff that might be less interesting.
Okay, let's get through fertilizer and propagation, then we'll get to the diseases. All right.
Okay, well, when you're fertilizing something, you've got all sorts of choices of fertilizer. You've got, like, a fertilizer that will make your grass green in a couple of days, which is not generally a good fertilizer for vegetables,
mm-hmm.
unless you've got kale or some kind of cruciferous things like broccoli, Brussels sprouts, mm-hmm. cauliflower. You want to have something, if you've got tomatoes and peppers and eggplant, you want to have something that has a lot of magnesium in it. And
okay.
if you're old like me and you soak your feet in Epsom salts, instead of throwing that water down the sink, if you put that on your garden, you would exponentially increase your amount of tomatoes and peppers and eggplant that you would get.
Well, now, talking about throwaway water, I have a 10-gallon fish tank, and I have to clean it out at least once a month, and I'm about ready to do that. Now, I've been putting that fish water on my plants. Is that a good idea?
Well, depends on what plants you're putting it on. If
oh,
you
okay.
put it on something that it's usually going to have algae in it,
mm-hmm.
and algae can be useful, but algae is very close cousin of fungi. So
oh.
if you're putting it on your, particularly your tomatoes or your roses or something like that, you're going to have more of a chance
okay.
to have blight, you know, black spots, or have mold growing on your plant.
Well, the reason why
for certain things.
Well, the reason why I thought it would be good for it is because it had a lot of fish poo in it.
Well, the fish poo is probably good too, but I would
yeah.
depends if you're very good about keeping it clean and you don't have a lot of algae or moldy-looking stuff in it, then that's not going to be a problem.
Okay. Now, I use a fish for product fertilizer. Is that better for tomatoes, or is it better for the green type of plants?
Well, that is going to have phosphorus in it and calcium, and that would be probably better for your long-term things like your asparagus,
okay,
or your rhubarb, or something like that.
Oh, and I'm so happy.
You can have too much phosphorus. Phosphorus, okay, is generally in fish poo. Any kind of poo is phosphorus. Like,
okay.
You know, you can buy a product made from chicken manure that's been treated so it doesn't have a lot of seeds and stuff in it.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's very good for some things. But
I'm so excited. Dr. Coleman, I am so excited because I planted three you were talking about asparagus. I planted three crowns of asparagus, and I thought nothing was going to happen. I just, it sat there and sat there, and now I have three ferns, perfect ferns, rising up. And I'm so happy.
Yep.
Next year, I'm going to plant three more right next to them.
Well, I sent you some information about that purple passion. That's a very nice asparagus.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure what to, I'll have to look to see which version I have of it. But you did tell me that the purple passion asparagus was good.
It's almost like candy. It tastes so good.
Oh, I'm going to have to get that.
I don't even get it into the house. I usually eat it before I get it inside.
Fantastic. I'm
but,
sorry. I threw you off.
If you're looking at fertilizing your fruit trees or your asparagus patch or your rhubarb or something like that, you want something that's going to be longer lasting than what you would be putting in your vegetable garden. And one of the things that works really well for fruit trees and tomatoes and roses are some spikes that you can get, which will release fertilizer over a certain period of time.
I've seen those, yeah. Now, as a matter of fact, some of them are specific. They claim they're specifically for tomatoes. And
yes, they do. Yeah. And they, you know, they would have a lot of magnesium in it. And if you use milk, if you use your Epsom salts to soak anything, then that would be a good thing to use for getting rid of your water.
Okay. Now, I've struggled to find Epsom salts. Where do you go to find that?
You can buy them even from Aldi's.
Oh, really?
Epsom salts, they're about $3 for a couple of pounds.
Okay.
Anywhere from 3 to 5, depending on whether you want some that smell good or just plain. I'd use ones that just plain.
Yeah, that's what I think I would do. All right. Cool.
But we're talking about propagation, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this is that this time in June to July is the only time that you can move irises, because irises just after they finish blooming, you want to take out the bed of irises, and you want to make sure you don't have these little slug-looking things in it.
Okay.
And you can use it when you plant them. You can put spectracide inside of it so that you don't get this slug growing, and it goes up into the root, into the stem of the plant, and it kills the plant. But irises, if you don't separate them, the middle of the iris bed will die because it doesn't get enough nutrients. Tubers grow mostly on top of the ground. So timing is very important, whether it's a perennial. We talked about blooming times for pruning. You also want to think about blooming times for perennials. You really want to move perennials either very early if it's a late bloomer, or very late if it's an early bloomer, because you want to, if you move it too soon and it's an early bloomer, then you won't get blooms this year. And people like coneflowers or Shasta daisies, or particularly these, they're like torch lilies and stuff like that. You want to move those after they bloom.
Okay. Now, jumping back on those iris, do you have to separate those every year?
No, you can separate them as long as 3 years in between. But to get much more than 3 years, then you're hurting yourself because the ones in the middle will die.
Okay.
And they tend to collect these, they look like caterpillars inside of the stems. And if you're, if the middle of the garden is under stress because it's been there too long, then you're going to get those and you'll ruin your whole bed.
Yeah.
So three years is a is
3 years.
What you want to look at.
Okay.
Also, a lot of people say, people come to my garden, they say, oh, I really like that plant. Can we dig up a piece of it or something like that? Well, a lot of times it's a bush, and you can dig bushes like spirea or something like that because it has a, they reproduce by seed, and so you get, I got spirea all over in the woods, so, you know, that's an easy way, but you have other things like an oak leaf hydrangea or the Annabelle hydrangeas or those types of plants, and they, the best way to use, to get those would either be to dig them after they bloom, and the roots of those are very woody. So you might even have to get a chainsaw to separate them if you haven't separated it for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
And you just get a block of it and you put it in the ground.
That won't hurt them by using a chainsaw on them?
No, I thought about using dynamite on some that were too big.
Okay.
But you can also, if you have a particular plant that has, that you've gotten and you want to have more of them, you can pull the plant limb down and you can put it on the ground and put a rock or a concrete block or something and just put a little bit of dirt underneath it, and that will make a new, it will make roots where it touches the ground.
Hmm.
And then you can cut it off from the mama plant and then you've got another plant.
What type of plants can you do that with?
Almost anything.
Really?
You can do it with Weigelia. You can do it with hydrangeas. Mostly you want to do it with a shrub-type plant.
Yeah. Huh. Okay.
But they have a new product now on the market that I saw that it looks like an almond.
Mm-hmm.
And you open it up and you put a little bit of dirt inside of it and you clamp it onto the side of the plant that you want to propagate. And what it does is it will, it's just like putting it down on the ground and put the rock on it. It will make that new plant, and you just open up this almond and you've got a plant to plant the top of.
So I assume what you have is the roots growing in that almond-shaped thing, right?
Yes,
yeah.
The roots grow in that almond-shaped thing.
Huh, cool.
But there's you know, there's a lot of ways that you can propagate things, but you want to think about propagating in the same vein that you were thinking about pruning as far as when you want to propagate it.
Mm-hmm.
You want, like, I have probably 70 different kinds of daffodils in my yard, and I wish that I had them in groups, but when I moved them from my house in Upper Arlington, we just brought truckloads of daffodils and we just planted them. But
dumped them, yeah.
They need to, you know, I need to move them around. And you want to do it after the plant dies down. Or if you can mark it, you can do it in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you do the same thing with grape hyacinths or with Dutch hyacinths or daffodils or tulips. You want to divide them in the fall. And I wanted us to spend a lot of time on disease control because with the weather we're having, we've got very wet, cool weather now, and the next week we're going to have dry and hot. And that puts a lot of stress on our plants.
Yeah.
Particularly the plants that we like grow right now are peppers and tomatoes. Everybody wants to have fresh tomatoes. Who's got the fresh? Who's going to get the first fresh tomato sandwich?
I've got a lot of tomatoes going, and they're real tall, but Boy, I don't know if they'll last.
Well, again, you know, when you plant the tomatoes, if you haven't planted your tomatoes yet, and you get plants from a garden store, you can put those tomatoes, plant them on horizontally instead of vertically.
Yeah, you told me
and
that.
And every place that tomato plant is touching the soil will make roots.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be a lot better than having a very tall plant, because it takes so much more energy for that plant to bring the nutrients up in a very skinny, tall plant than one that's got a lot of root material because you planted it on the side.
Well, when I planted my tomatoes, and I started them in my basement, and when I planted them, you had told me to plant them really deep. So that's what I did.
Yes,
I hope,
really deep.
And they're, I think, really strong because of that.
Yeah, well, if they're small enough, but if you, this time of year, if you go to the garden centers, they're going to have plants that are a lot taller than what those plants were that you took out of the basement.
Yeah.
And they're going to be spindly.
Yeah.
And if you plant those plants and you don't turn them on the side, then you're going to stress them and they'll die.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So,
that.
Now, the other thing that you have to worry about is, we were talking about pulling off suckers on tomato plants. And suckers are the kind of like the limbs that grow in between the nodules where the leaves come off of the tomato plant.
Yeah.
And you can actually pull them off and just kind of pinch them off, and you can put them in soil and you'll have another tomato
plant.
Yeah,
that's, you said that. Now, if people are looking for those, it's if you hold your hand up, your fingers go straight up and your thumb goes out to the right, those suckers would grow in between your thumb and your fingers, right? That's what
that
you're looking for? Yeah, okay. I'm just trying to clear it for people.
Yeah, and if you like right now, we've had a lot of rain and we've had a lot of warmth.
Mm-hmm.
So those suckers are going to be going, blue blazes come Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday when we have 80 and 90 degree temperatures.
Yeah.
And they might be 6 or 7 inches long by the time you get to them. And you can put them in a jar of water and you can make new plants out of them to give to your neighbors or plant in your garden.
Now,
if you leave them on your plant, you're going to reduce the amount of air that goes through that tomato mm-hmm. plant, because where in between the limbs are going to be all these new limbs,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to create a lot of fungus, and you'll get the bottom rot on your tomato. The tomato will get almost ripe, and you turn it over, and it's got a black spot on the bottom of it. Because it didn't have enough air going around it while it was growing.
Are there other indicators of when you're getting fungus growing on your tomatoes? Do they have little black spots on them? Or?
Well, they have black spots on them, and if somebody were lucky enough to have been able to put tomatoes out, say, in the end of April, early May, and were able to protect them, then those tomato plants are probably close to having ripe tomatoes on them. But with all the rain that we've had, those tomatoes will probably burst. And that's because it's gotten too much rain at one time. So when I tell people how they should water the plants to keep down disease control, they kind of look at me crazy because they don't see the difference between watering and diseases.
Mm-hmm.
But if you water, you want to give an inch of water to a tomato plant at least once a week.
An inch.
But you don't
okay.
want to give a fifth of an inch every 5 days, because that's going to grow very shallow roots. You want to give an inch of water once instead of giving that inch of water over quite a few days.
Doesn't that stress the plant, for those 4 days you're not giving it water?
If you gave it an inch of water, the next 4 days,
it's
that
okay.
water has gone down into the plant, and the roots are much deeper.
Okay.
So they're going to, it's not going to get stressed.
Okay, cool.
Right. Also, the time of day that you water is very important, because a lot of people go out in the middle of the day, it's really hot, those plants really need to get watered right now. But what happens if you water the plant at the middle, on the middle of the day, then the water droplets that fall onto the leaves of your peppers, particularly your eggplant, those leaves that are much wider, the water drops are like a prism, and they will direct the sunlight, and they'll burn the leaves.
You cured me of that. I now water it when it's getting darker at night.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you, if you're watering when it's getting dark, you want, you're much better watering from the bottom instead of spraying it.
Okay.
Because if you spray it, you're going to have more of a chance for the leaves to get burnt, or if it's overnight, for them to get moldy.
Oh, okay.
So if you always give the water from the ground, you're much better off.
I'll have to start doing that, because I've been spraying them. Okay. All right, good.
Well, it is what it is. You know, you can...
Yeah.
If you had a... it's called a watering... it's not a pipe, but it's like... It's like a water hose, except instead of having all the water come out the end... It has holes throughout the the hose. It has holes in the hose.
Yep.
And if you put that in between the rows, then that waters, you're not wasting water by the water evaporating. You're not putting it on the plants where it would get moldy, and you're not getting it so it would be burning the plant. So that's a very good way of watering your plant.
Okay. I will. I haven't added that to my my garden yet, but I think that's something I will add irrigation like that for all of next year. So.
Well, it's very very inexpensive.
Is it?
At the end of the summer, you can buy water hose for very very cheap, and you can just put holes in it.
Okay.
That's the cheapest way to do it. If you buy a water hose that they've already got holes in it, that's a lot more expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you go out there in your vegetable garden and you see some mold on a leaf or on a stem, what do you think you should do with that?
Pluck it off, I would think.
You want to pluck it off and you want to get it out of the area.
Yeah, yeah, because it'll pass it along.
You don't want to pluck it off and throw it on the ground, because then that will propagate the mold around your other plants.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can put it in a trash bag. If you've got a compost pile that's away from your garden, you could put it in the compost pile.
Oh,
the compost pile gets hot enough that it will
kill
that
it.
Mold.
Yeah, okay.
But if you just pluck it off and throw it on the ground, you're just giving more opportunity for that mold or disease to
spread,
propagate.
Yeah, okay. All right, I will do that.
There's certain other things that you have to worry about. And roses, I have a shade garden now. And in up Arlington, I had a sun garden. So I had roses and lots of things that grow in the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't have roses here because I don't have enough sun.
Too many trees out there, yeah.
I have 30 acres of trees.
Yeah, I know you do.
And, you know, it's I love my trees, but... And I will look at somebody else's roses rather than cut my trees.
Yeah, yeah.
But roses, you have to make sure, again, that you prune that rose very well so that you have air that goes through the rose bush. And a lot of people like climbing roses, and the climbing roses are very pretty, and some of the older climbing roses have nice smells to them, so they make your whole yard pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have to... consider pruning it and making sure that it has air through it, because roses particularly get a black, light-looking thing. And they also get, if it gets too wet, the rose doesn't get a chance to get the dew off of it in the morning, then you get aphids that attack the plant. And these aphids will bring with them molds and this fungi that make black spots on your roses. And okay. One of the easiest ways to take care of that is to make sure that you prune your roses properly and keep them pruned. And if you do see some aphids, instead of buying expensive aphid killer, the best thing for aphids is soapy water.
Really?
So you can get soapy water and just spray it on there. Or you can, it's usually on the leaves, not on the stems.
Isn't it usually on the underside as well, more than the top?
Well, if you've got some cotton gloves, you can just soak your gloves in the soapy water and just put it on, take the leaves and just roll them through your hand, and that will be enough to get rid of the aphids.
Good.
Fruit trees, there's a lot of things that attack fruit trees, both fungi and insects. And, I enjoy an organic garden, so I don't mind every once in a while seeing a worm in the apple, as long as it's a full worm and not a half a worm.
Why would it be a half a worm?
If that would mean that I would eat the other half, or eat the other half.
That's what I thought you meant. All right. But you can eat around them, right? A worm doesn't hurt them.
You can eat around them.
Yeah. Okay.
One of the things that you get most frequently is like a little scabby thing on the particularly apples. Mm-hmm. And it looks like it's got a little knot on it. And those things you can cut out if you like organic products.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the things that attack apples and stuff are, you use an oil-based spray, and you use it early in your season. So it's not time to do that now.
All right.
But in order to get the bugs and stuff off of it now, again, you need to make sure that you've got good pruning so that the air can go through the trees and you don't have a place for the bacteria and the bugs to grow.
Mm-hmm.
This time of year, one of the things that's a bane of civilization are the Japanese beetles.
Yeah, I'm starting to see a few, I think.
Yeah. Well, for the first couple of years I lived on the farm, I bought these big bags that said that they would get rid of the Japanese beetles. And my thought is that I live 2 miles almost from my nearest neighbor, and I think I got the bags and it got the Japanese beetles from my neighbors, because there would have been nothing in the woods before I was here.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit using that, and you can spray a spectracide, and it's not going to affect the fruit. And you can do it on vegetables also. And you can dust it. 7-dust is very good. And 7-dust is degraded within 24 hours. So even if you sprayed it on your tomatoes today, tomorrow you could eat the tomatoes, because it would not still be there.
Okay. That's 7, as in like 7, the number?
S-E-V-I-N.
Oh, 7. Okay. All right.
7.
I got to write that down.
It's southern for not the number.
Okay.
But if you've got asparagus, if you have a lot of asparagus like I do, sometimes you have asparagus beetles on it. And they're very, very little tiny things. And Mother Nature has all kinds of ways to take care of things. If you have asparagus beetles and you have ants in your garden, the ants will eat the asparagus beetles and you don't have asparagus beetles
good.
Anymore.
I do have ants in my garden.
That will help.
Okay.
You've got rhubarb. There's not a lot of stuff that attacks rhubarb. I don't know why, but
I don't
really have problems with stuff growing my rhubarb. But as far as the grapes, if you have not done a good job of pruning grapes, there's called a Spanish method, and it literally you have the grapevine come up in the middle, and you have horizontal, because again, fruit grows horizontally, not vertically.
Mm-hmm.
But you put it on, it looks like a trellis, and you've got a good 8 to 10 inches between the rows of grapes. That's the way you'd want to do it, and that would take care of most of the things that are going to grow on grapes.
Not more than 2 months ago, I was at my youngest son's vineyard, and he and I he's got 2 acres, two or more acres of grapevines, because he raises it for wine and stuff like that. And he bottles wine, as a matter of fact. But he showed me all how you do that. You set out the horizontal, and there are, you only have two up. He clips certain of the things off so that there could be lots of air, and everything that he told me about the grapes we have to grow on that horizontal one. And yeah,
okay.
Quite an education. I wish I had had you with me.
Okay, well, there's we talked a little bit about tomatoes and peppers.
Yeah.
And cruciforms are like cabbage and broccoli and cauliflower.
Mm-hmm.
Those early crop is just about finishing on that, and it's very difficult to buy those plants in the summertime because people don't have them available. But you can make plants out of them very easily, but you have to put the seeds for those in the freezer for at least a few days before you plant them, and then you can have them in the wintertime.
It thinks it's going through the winter or something like that? The seeds think they went through the winter?
We've had Brussels sprouts for Christmas dinner most years.
Oh, I love that.
It's very nice, and I think I told you you could cut them off and turn them upside down in your basement,
mm-hmm.
and they would go ahead and get ripe.
Yeah, that you did.
But they get a lot of bugs in them, particularly the Brussels sprouts,
mm-hmm.
and they're like aphids, and you want to be sure that you use 7-Dust and stuff like that. And if you've got a broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cabbage and cauliflower and you've started harvesting it, if you will cut the trunk of that, it will make its own new plants in the fall. So if you cut off a cabbage and made a cross in that cabbage, you have 4 plants. And then when you're getting ready to, like in August, September, you can pull off at least 2 of those so that it's not too much. And then you can grow new plants from those. It's particularly good for broccoli, cauliflower, and cabbage. Not so much for Brussels sprouts, because I've never really gotten very good Brussels sprouts in the spring. It's just not a long enough season.
Mm-hmm.
But 7-Dust is really good for putting on those plants when you get these aphids, or what they are.
Yep. Okay.
And the other thing that I like, squash and watermelon and cantaloupe and
mm-hmm.
pumpkins and stuff like that, and there's a white fly that goes around the garden, and it lays its eggs on the leaves of the squash. And when the caterpillar, when the eggs hatch, they go into the stalk, and they make a caterpillar inside of the stalk. And that's what, when you are just about ready to have your nice yellow squash or pumpkins, and you pull at the vine, and the vine just falls apart, and
mm-hmm.
the bottom of it looks rotten. That's
what did it,
moth that's produced eggs that makes the caterpillar in the bottom of this plant.
Now, I have lots. My zucchini is going crazy right now. Should I look now for things like that, or?
Well, you're not going to be able to really get be able to kill the little eggs because you won't be able to see them.
No, yeah.
But you can spray them with a soluble 7-Dust.
Okay, all right.
And that will keep them, because they, when they produce the egg, it eats a little bit of the plant as it goes down into the stem,
mm-hmm.
and that's where it hibernates and makes the caterpillar.
Now this year,
7-Dust is for for stuff that eats. When the animal eats it, 7-Dust is going to be present.
Okay.
And you can put 7-Dust around the bottom of your tomato plant and the bottom of your, on the ground, on the tomato and the pepper plant, and that will keep the bugs which are coming from the ground to get up into your plant.
Excellent. Now I'm getting this year, last year I had very bad luck with my zucchini, because all I got was, I think, two small zucchinis. That they were fine, but there were only two of them. And this year, because I only got female flowers. This year, all my flowers, I looked at them, almost all of them are male. Why would it change like that?
I don't know. I can't sex flowers, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, the zucchini flower has it's kind of bulbous behind the flower, and that makes it a boy flower. If it's a skinny one, it's a female flower. That's vice versa. Anyway.
Okay. You have stamen and ovaries in the flowers.
Yeah.
And they usually have both of them there.
Well, now on the zucchini, you have to have a male and a female. Flower.
Don't talk to you like this because Teddy's making too much noise.
Okay, all right. Excellent. Hey, Teddy. All right, go ahead. We were going to talk about the pruning influences of diseases as well.
Well, that was what I was telling you, that if you don't leave enough air, you know, if you leave all the suckers on your plant and stuff, that you're going to not have enough air through the plant, and you're going to get mold.
Okay.
I'll put them outside.
Okay. Well, go ahead and I'll keep vamping here while I put him outside. Well, we all have our problems when we're on the air with little kids and critters, animals. All right.
Okay, he's outside then.
We're talking to Dr. Marilyn Coleman, and we're talking about disease control. So, are you back?
I'm back.
All right.
I was going to suggest that there's not a lot of things to talk about in July and August.
Right.
And if your viewers wanted to send in questions, they could either send you a note or call you sometime and give you questions that we could answer for next month, the next 2 months.
That will be very good. So send them to the radio station, WWGH, 523 South Prospect Street, Marion, Ohio, 43302. That's 523.
Can't they also send you something online?
Oh, absolutely.
The website, that would be cheaper than...
Yeah, you can go to my Facebook page. Just type in Glenn Coble on Facebook, and I think I have two or three different Facebook pages, but you can send it to any one of those, because I look at both of them, so I will try to give them to Marilyn.
I have a Facebook page, too, but I will have shoulder surgery next week, but I'll still be able to talk on the phone. But
sure.
There's a lot of things that go on, but July and August is mostly like trying to get your garden harvested and stuff like that. It's not so much
that and keeping.
There's not a lot you can do.
That and keeping the pests, keeping the pests away too.
And the other thing that I was going to tell you about is that you have to, once, like right now when we've had all this weather.
Yeah.
This rain, the tomato plants will grow all these beautiful leaves, and we will get, they're called tobacco worms or tomato worms,
mm-hmm.
And they will, in a day, they will decimate your whole plant.
So what do I look for?
You want to start looking for, I look at my plants every day, but when you look out there and you see that there's a black turd-looking stuff mm-hmm. on the leaves, then you probably got a tobacco worm or tomato worm.
How do you get rid of it?
Horns. What do you do with them?
Yeah, oh, how do you get rid of them? Pluck them?
I pull them off, yep. And I throw them to the birds, and they have a good lunch.
There you go. I love it.
I don't. There's a parasitic wasp that Ohio is one of the largest states for the production. Tomatoes is used in tomato ketchup and tomato sauce.
That's interesting.
And these, you can either grow the tomatoes in... Tomatoes are self-pollinating, so you don't need to have bees or something that will pollinate it. So right. You can either cover the plants, because what happens is this, it's some kind of moth or something like that that lays its eggs on the tomato plant.
Right.
And then the eggs hatch, and then they produce this. Sometimes they look like you could put them on a barbecue. They're so big.
They're big. Wow.
They're okay. Big. They could be much bigger than your thumb.
Oh, geez. Yikes.
So they're pretty. You'll see them, but you'll see the effects of them long before you find them.
Because
when you look out and you check it on your plants, you want to see if you've got some limbs, some stems that have been eaten, or if you're losing a lot of leaves.
Okay.
And it's probably this little caterpillar. And they'll grow from, a speck to 2 or 3 inches long in a day.
Oh, yikes. I have to ask my wife to come take those off.
Well, you can do it with a pair of gloves.
Okay.
I've never been stung by them, but they're really ugly. They have a big horn on the top of them. That's why they're called a hornworm.
Yeah, I think I've seen pictures of them.
I have concrete that goes from the driveway up to my a garage, and I usually throw them on the concrete, and the birds eat them. That's their treat for the day.
Sounds like a good idea. That's what I have a place like that too. Excellent.
But I know that we're getting low on time.
Yeah, we got about 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, so if somebody has any particular things, they can even send me stuff on Facebook I'm on Facebook.
All right, and we'll do this again next month, and we'll try to answer questions from people.
That'll be good.
All right. Hey, Dr. Coleman, thank you so much for coming on, and I'm sorry we struggled to get the message to me, but we got it taken care of, and so things went well. And
you have a wonderful day.
Yeah, and you have a wonderful time out there in your forest.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Have a great day, Dr. Coleman. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Dr. Coleman, I guess you could call her our station's horticulturist. She has some great ideas. And I tell you what, I've taken her ideas that she's given us over the last 3 or 4 months and implemented them into my garden, and I think it's really helping. I know that I've done many of the things that she suggested, and I know they haven't heard anything. So I suggest to you listen to that lady. She knows what she's talking about. Dr. Marilyn Coleman, and she lives down in Richwood, or down in that area, and she has a huge farm area. I think she said 30 acres of forest. I haven't been down there yet, but I guess it's just beautiful, her flowers and stuff. So I'm going to have to get down there. Thanks very much for tuning us on. Now we're going to go away here in about a minute, and we'll be back after our 15-minute break with Swap Shop. And you know how that works. Give us a call, and maybe we can get rid of some of that junk that's out in your garage. We will be talking about Father's Day and some of the trivial stuff around Father's Day. I hate to call it trivial. I'm a father. I don't think of my day as trivial, but I looked up Father's Day trivia, and I've got some interesting stuff to let you know so that you can be the smartest person at the Father's Day party that you're going to plan for your father, right? My mouse's not working. We'll be back after our 15-minute break, and thanks for tuning in to listen to Dr. Coleman.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LP, Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.